Maine is nationally known for its seafood, its blueberries, and more lately, its craft brewed beers. Maine is home to a growing number of small and not-so-small breweries, some of which have garnered national reputations. What's behind this trend, and is it sustainable? I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're talking about beer and the business of brewing. Just how is beer made? How do these small companies get noticed in a world of giants like Budweiser and Heineken? And how are beers paired with certain foods? With me in the studio, Rob Todd of Allagash Brewing Company in Portland, Tim Adams of Oxbow Brewing Company in Newcastle, and Dave Evans, owner of the Great Lost Bear Restaurant in Portland. We'd like to hear from you as well. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, message us on Facebook, or call 1-800-399-3566. It's all about the beer. This is Maine Calling. And welcome to the program. In the interest of full disclosure, I'm not a huge beer fan. So I'm a curious bystander and interested in your craft. And Rob Todd, let's start with you. You're at Allagash, which has been around since the 90s. You know a thing or two about this business. What's driving the thirst for quality beer in this country?
Well, hopefully, first of all, we can change your opinion on beer today. Maybe you can try a couple of the beers we brought and we'll slowly make you a beer fan. But so what's driving the thirst for beer? I think you go 20 or 30 years back. I mean, depending on when you became of legal drinking age, for me, it was almost 25 years ago. Back then, beer was just beer. There wasn't a whole lot of variety at all. Pretty much everything you got was the same, all 5%, not a whole lot of character. A lot of the craft beers now call it kind of yellow fizzy beer.
And Löwenbräu was top shelf, I think.
And Löwenbräu was top shelf. I mean, if you went out to a great restaurant for dinner, you maybe had two selections of beer on the menu. They didn't even really list it on the menu. There just wasn't a whole lot of choice. And I think once people started discovering some of these other styles that are available, and they discovered it by drinking imports and by drinking homebrews when homebrewing became legal in the mid-70s, people just discovered there was a whole world of beer out there that they never knew about, and they started becoming curious about those beers.
Tim Adams, were you just interested in beer before you started the business, or did you see it as a real business opportunity?
It was very much a result of a serious love of beer, for sure. I've been lucky enough to live in some great places that have had some wonderful beer, and growing up in Maine, you know, I was certainly influenced by the strong beer scene that's been alive here for a very long time. So yeah, the decision to start Oxbow was all about wanting to make our own great beer and add to the, you know, wonderful beer scene here in Maine.
Dave Evans, you have, is it 72 beers on
right
tap?
Now, yes.
It almost seems like it's just so much choice. You'd have to get an education to know which one to choose.
We have many people walk in, they're used to Budweiser, and they're baffled. We try to start them on starter beers, like Rob's beer is a great one to start with if you're unfamiliar, Oxbow as well. And next thing you know, they're trying some really heavy-duty stuff that they never thought they'd have put their lips to.
Yeah. Explain that, if you would, when you say a good beer to start with. You mean it's not too complicated? There's not a lot going on? What is
it,
that?
It tastes great, number one. But most people, when the craft brewing first started, Budweiser was making fun of it, like saying, have you tried this awful microbrew, homebrew, that's hazelnut, tastes like mud? You know, and people were terrified of that thing. And they would come in and try something they never had before. It was very high in alcohol and probably scared the hell out of them.
Rob, Allagash is what kind of beer is Allagash?
Well, we've always done traditional Belgian-style beers, and we've, in the past few years, gotten into some very experimental Belgian-style beers where we're really stretching the style, aging beer in oak. We have a few hundred oak barrels at the brewery. We're experimenting with wild yeasts and some traditional bacterias that sour the beer and give it some just very interesting, intriguing, unique, complex tastes. Traditional for the Belgian culture. But Dave mentioned just education. It's been a huge part of our lives at Allagash. When I started 17 years ago with Allagash White, which is a cloudy beer, it's unfiltered traditionally, spiced with coriander and orange peel, has a very unique yeast, traditional Belgian yeast, to a lot of people that first tried that beer, they were just shocked by the flavor. It was just a very unique beer drinking experience. So really for the first 10 or 12 years, we had to spend most of our time educating people on the style of this beer, kind of what it is, how we make it, that it's great to pair with food. So just a long, slow educational process.
Let's start with the basics and then we can build from there our understanding of some of the things that we're talking about. What is beer? Where does it come from?
Beer is basically malt, water, hops, and yeast. Beer has generally those four ingredients. And as I mentioned, we use all four of those ingredients, but we also use some interesting ingredients for the Belgian. In Oxbow, I'm sure Tim can talk about it a little bit. I'm sure they use a lot of unique ingredients as well and do some barrel aging. But we use malt, water, hops, and yeast. We also commonly use spices, as I mentioned, in the white, coriander, and orange peel. The Trappist monks in Belgium have for hundreds of years used sugars in their beer that raise the alcohol content of the beer, give it a very unique taste. We use unmalted grains. We age a number of our beers on fruit, which is a traditional process. So we're using those four main ingredients, and we're also using a lot of experimental ingredients as well to give people unique experiences with beer.
So you may have just answered this, but what makes it Belgian?
For us, those ingredients, but probably the most important component is the yeast strain. Belgium's kind of sandwiched between Germany and France, so their beer culture picks up a lot of tradition from Germany, very traditional beer culture, but they also pick up a lot from wine culture in France, and probably the most notable component they pick up from wine culture would be those yeast strains. In some ways, we almost look at it as making beer with wine yeast. You just get very unique flavors in the beer from those yeast strains.
Tim, Oxbow makes, I read in my notes, farmhouse-style beer. What is that?
Farmhouse-style ale is sort of a subgenre within the general, you know, Belgian-style ales. And it's a pretty nebulous, sort of vague style, but the one sort of coherent thing about it is that we use a farmhouse yeast, which is widely believed to be a descendant of a red wine yeast. We ferment it at much warmer temperatures, and it has a voracious appetite for sugars. So the one thing that you'll find consistent among our beers is that they're all very, very dry, which I personally love, and our fans like that about our beers as well. And farmhouse beers, there's also the farmhouse breweries of Belgium, the traditional ones, they're funky. They're in, you know, rural locations. They're originally brewing beers for their farm workers, which were thirst quenching, but, you know, sort of indigenous to that area in their own peculiar ways. And we're doing the same thing up in Newcastle.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Dave Evans, a customer comes in and doesn't know the difference between beer and ale. How do you begin to have the conversation about getting them to recognize what kind of taste profiles they might like?
Well, I just point across the bar how happy everyone is drinking, number one. And it really depends on the taste. Some people will never enjoy a craft beer. We still sell a lot of Bud Light, unfortunately. It's fortunate that we still carry it, of course, but most of the people that come in enjoy the craft beers, and most of them are from Maine these days.
Right. So is it a particular sort of person who seeks out craft beers?
I thought we'd talk about this anyway. When the first wave of Maine beers came along, they were mostly the British style, and they successful Geary Shipyard, Gritties, Sea Dog, and kept going. And then a lot more came and failed. And then Rob was one of the first to change the direction, and Tim did the same thing. And this new wave of all the new ones in Maine are just a totally different style. And the people who started drinking at 21 may have not liked the British styles, but then they were educated about the craft breweries. And then when they turned 30, 35, they really appreciate the new styles coming out.
How would you describe the difference between what you're saying is the British styles versus some of these newer craft beers?
For someone to tell you...
To talk about taste is hard, yeah. I know. But are they heavier?
Heavy is misused so much because people still think stout is heavy. It's a very light beer. it's a different taste. They're mostly Ringwood wheat yeast they started with. So I'm not putting it down, but it just a lot of the beers tasted the same when Maine first started making beer. And then when the new brewers came up, they changed directions. And now everybody's happy.
When you said some of them disappeared, was there a phase when it became saturated with British styles?
Not necessarily British styles, but a lot of brewers came and went. You know, they just didn't have enough financing. And I think the market was saturated for a while. But as I say, as the younger drinkers got older, the new people went right into craft beers instead of just making a stop at the Budweisers along the way.
Yeah. Tim, what are some of the challenges of a young brewer with a good idea and a sense that there's a market there? What are the challenges to bringing that to life?
Too many challenges to even go into. It was a huge effort to get a brewery off the ground from, you know, saying, all right, I'm a home brewer and I can make these great beers and all my friends like them, but I want to get the business going. You need to raise a lot of money and have, you know, a very solid business plan and, you know, something, in my opinion, something that is, you know, both very high quality and unique to the market. You know, I wouldn't want to start a brewery that made the exact same beers that Rob makes or that some of these other Maine brewers make. So I think, you know, making sure you have a nice, unique idea is very important as well.
I agree with Tim 100%. I mean, when I started back in 94, 95, there were just a ton of great breweries in the state and they were making some great British style beers. And we just wanted to take a little bit of approach, a little bit of a different approach. And I think the tough part of that was that our beer was so much different at the time. It took us really 10 or 12 years to get to the point where we had educated people on this style. It just took a long time to build the brand. I used to walk into accounts 15 years ago with this unfiltered Belgian style wheat beer, pour people a sample, and the first thing they say is, what's wrong with it? Why is it cloudy? Why does it look weird? And then they'd get the aroma of the beer and the taste, and they say, why does it smell funny? Why does it taste funny? They had just never had these flavor experiences before. But that's really why we got into the business in the first place. And that's still what motivates us now, is with each of our new beers, you know, starting with the white, what we really want to do is give people a unique flavor taste experience, just a unique experience drinking the beer. We want to make it interesting to drink these beers. And I think that's the same thing that motivates most people that are in this business.
So it's not a mass appeal. I think, as Dave was saying, there are still those people who prefer Bud Light and will, you know, probably never stray far from it. So you're talking about kind of a niche market, that is, people who appreciate high end or interesting tasting beers, but there's a limited population of them.
Absolutely. And, you know, early on, people would look at me and they'd never tried a beer like this maybe. And they'd say, you know what, this really isn't for me. I hope you're not offended. And you know what, it didn't really bother me because we didn't want to brew a beer that had a ton of mass appeal because those were generally beers that everyone else was drinking. And why spend a year building a brewery and a number of years building the brand if you're just doing something that someone else is already doing?
So there's no temptation in either of your businesses to come up with a beer that may not be quite as complicated or sophisticated, but will be more mass appeal. That's not even in your thought process.
It is to a certain extent. I mean, not mass appeal, but for example, our newest beer that we've released as a year-round beer is called the Space Cowboy Country Ale. And it's in my opinion, it's relatively simple. It's still much more complex than your next, you know, lighter beer. But for us, it's one of our more simple beers, and people just love it. I mean, it's not, I don't know. People are really into it, and a lot of the folks that have come up to our brewery and they've tried some of our beers, and they like them, they enjoy them. But we have found a lot of success actually with this most recent beer that's a little bit more. We call it crushable.
Crushable. Yeah. Okay, I was going to say, is it accessible?
and another way to look at it is we always try to look at our new beers as beers that aren't formed in a focus group or in a marketing group. You know, we start with the beer. Someone at the brewery, they could be working on the bottling line, in our retail store, in administration, or one of the brewers, they'll have an idea for a beer, kind of a new flavor and taste experience, something that might, you know, pair real well with a food or something aged on a new fruit. And we'll start with that. We'll start with the beer. We won't start by looking at, okay, what can we sell a lot of? You know, it's all very much beer-driven and experience-driven.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, if you're barbecuing fish and it slips through the grill, what do you do?
Do you have a cat? Because that cat's going to eat well. You're pretty much done. At that point, you've sacrificed the fish to the charcoal gods.
Advice from Bridget Lancaster and Jack, Bishop of America's Test Kitchen. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, call it extremism, but conservative Yuval Levin doesn't apologize. The U.S. government needs a radical paring back, he says. We'll hear him out. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
You can tune in for On Point this evening at midnight.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're talking about beers brewed here in the state of Maine. With me in the studio, three men who know their beers. Rob Todd, founder of Allagash Brewing Company. Tim Adams, co-owner, head brewer and director of brewing operations at Oxbow Brewing Company. And Dave Evans, president and co-owner of The Great Lost Bear, a Portland restaurant specializing in showcasing craft beers. We'd like you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll start taking some calls in a minute, but I want to talk about pairing beer with food. Over this holiday weekend, we'll be feasting and maybe enjoying a few libations. How sophisticated does one have to be in one's knowledge of beer to pair them with food beyond chips? Rob Todd?
I don't think you have to be sophisticated at all. I think you can start slowly and experiment and have fun. I mean, I think people know what they like and what they don't like. And we've spent a ton of time at the brewery. Just for years, I've been doing beer dinners where we'll pair a different beer with a different course of food, and I'll stand up and talk before each course, talk about the food and the beer and why they pair together. And, you know, it's a lot of fun, and I encourage people to experiment and try new things. And there's information out there on the internet. We, on our website, allagash.com, we have a lot of information on beer and food, and I'd say dive into it.
What would you pair with, say, a burger or steak?
Our double ale, which is a 7% dark Abbey style beer, or maybe our four, which is a 10% big dark beer. I think those would go great with a burger or steak.
And Tim Adams with seafood?
Our farmhouse pale ale is absolutely just made for seafood. The notes from the yeast combined with the hops provide a lot of citrus and pepper, so it's just a natural accompaniment to Maine seafood.
Yeah, Dave Evans, do your customers ever say, you know, I'm having barbecued chicken? What would go well with that?
They don't say it, but we recommend an IPA with any spicy foods, and we have a lot of IPAs most times.
What's an IPA?
It's an Indian pale ale. It's a hoppier version of most beers are hoppy, but the IPAs are usually the hoppiest.
And hoppy is a bitter, adds a bitter taste to kind of balance the sweetness.
We call it a fine bitter. It's not bitter in a bad way. It's bitter in a good way.
talk about hoppy. We hear beer people say, "Oh, that's a hoppy beer." What does that mean, Rob?
Well, as we mentioned, there are four ingredients in beer: malt, water, hops, and yeast. Hops have been traditionally added to beer for hundreds of years. Basically, what they do is they balance the sweetness of the wort. You know, the base fermentable in beer is malted barley or malted wheat. So the starch from the malted barley or malted wheat. And, of course, there's some residual sweetness left behind after fermentation from those starches and sugars, and the hops provide a real nice balance to that sweetness. Hops are also a natural preservative to beer, and actually one of the reasons IPAs were very heavily hopped is those beers. The British would traditionally bring beer to on a long journey on a ship to India, and they found the more hops they added, the better the beer was preserved. So that's how that style of beer originated, and it's kind of an interesting group today between Tim's beers and our beers, I would say. They're not real. We have a couple heavily hopped beers, and you guys may, but I think in our Belgian vein, the Belgians tend to add just enough hops to balance the sweetness of the wort, with a few exceptions.
And we often hear things about, summer ale versus are there seasonal ales and beers?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, personally, depending on what the weather's like, what time of year it is, I feel a longing for different types of beer. In the winter, when it gets colder, I want something that's a little heartier and heavier, maybe darker. In the summertime, it's hot out. You want something that's light, crisp, refreshing. And I feel like most breweries' seasonal portfolios reflect those changes in temperature.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Let's go to Damriscotta and Tony. Hi, Tony. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yes. Go ahead, please.
Oh, I have two statements. One is a kudos to local beer folks, just continue making that great product. And then second is the question, centering around maybe the bittersweet feeling of some of those beers. Everyone wants success on local companies, but is there that bittersweet feeling when you become so much a part of that mass appeal? For example, like a Sam Adams, who, to my knowledge, had such a humble beginning. And then now they're just this large worldwide company. So what are your thoughts on those, on that remark about finding a niche and working with that locally here in Maine and within New England, but then having that mass appeal and being too large? Is there any bittersweet feelings regarding that?
Yeah.
I have some initial feelings. I think you really can't judge it by size. I think it's all company culture. When I started, our first year's production was only 120 barrels. We were tiny. I actually had my first beer at the Great Lost Bear 17 years ago. And we've grown a lot since then. Our production is now approaching 50,000 barrels. But we're we're more able to produce a more consistent beer. We're more able to experiment with beer because we can afford to do things like our Cool Ship series, where we installed a cool ship and have been making spontaneously fermented beers. We're able to afford to do some barrel aging projects. So I think it's all in your culture. If you can, despite your size, if you can maintain that culture of family and community and innovation in your brewery, I don't think size is a barrier at all.
There's no, from a marketing standpoint, there's no sort of crowd mentality whereby people will look at a brewery that's growing and suddenly see them as selling out or no longer that crafty.
There's definitely feelings in the beer geek community that follow those lines. Sam Adams. Nobody worked harder than Jim Cook to get his product out there, and he's kept the quality up as far as I can tell. And now even Shipyard is being criticized for being too big, and my God, they're not that big,
Right, so there's a point. Is there a tipping point where...
There's a tipping point with some fans, I'm afraid, that they feel that if they get too big, they get cocky or fold themselves. I don't know, because the beer has stayed true to its form as far as I can see.
Well, if you're one of those people, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Rob, did you want to add something?
I'll just say one of the things we've really focused on as we've grown is just continually being innovative, continually giving people new flavor and taste experience. And honestly, as we've grown, that's become easier for us because we've got a lot more experience and we've got a lot more tools to be able to do those projects.
Let's go to Reedfield and Barney. Hi, Barney.
Yep, hi.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I was going to ask the guys if they I was interested in hops, and I understand a few years ago there was like a shortage of hops maybe a bad weather season or something. And that would that be something that someone in Maine could perhaps make a living at growing hops for our local beer guys? And if they have a special variety that they use, or I'm sure they use probably a couple of different varieties, and I would like to hear what they have to say about that.
Yeah, I'll take this one. I actually have a friend of mine who's starting up a commercial project called The Hop Yard, which we're all really excited about. And there are a few other guys in Maine that are growing hops commercially. And all the brewers are so psyched when the fall rolls around and those hops are available. I mean, I think anybody who's growing hops in Maine would have no problem selling every last hop flower. Traditionally, you know, a fair amount of hops were grown in Maine before the Maine production moved out west to the Yakima Valley, where it's mostly located now. But we are seeing, you know, obviously a big emphasis coming along on using local ingredients in food or beer or whatever. And growing hops is right up there with that, and I'm excited to see more happening. People are also growing malts or growing barley in Maine and wheat, and we just need a place to malt it. We've got somebody down in Massachusetts doing a great job, but we need a maltster to open up in Maine, and then we could be a pretty sustainable little beer state.
We have an email from a listener who said he had learned that a lot of barley is grown in Maine, much of it exported to Canada for livestock feed. But is that usable barley? And when you say it's malted, what process is that, and why couldn't we do that here?
Well, the malting process is a very skilled procedure of moistening the grains themselves and encouraging them to germinate a little bit, and then stopping that process abruptly and roasting them or baking them in a large oven. And it's it takes a lot of equipment to do it and know-how, and it'd be wonderful if somebody started doing it around here.
Yeah, how many of your ingredients come from Maine, or how much do you have to import?
I'll build a little off what Tim said with the hops. I mean, I think it's great that some farmers are growing hops. It's tough in this state because the climate is not ideal for growing hops. It's much more hops thrive far better up in the Pacific Northwest, and on those larger farms, they're able to do it for a much lower cost. However, we as brewers, and I'm sure Tim will agree with this, we'll pay a lot more for a locally grown hop. And whenever farmers come through our door and say, "Hey, you know, will you buy some of our hops if they've got a crop?" We usually say to them, "Well, what do you need for it?" Because we know they've got to make a living, and we will absolutely pay more for a locally grown hop. There just aren't too many people doing it right now, but I think it's great that they are. I got sidetracked. What was your?
I just wondering how many of your other ingredients have to be imported, or could you get from Maine?
Well, as far as barley is concerned, there is a lot of barley grown in the state, but from what I understand, it's not malt quality barley. So it's definitely a higher grade of barley. It's a different type of barley that's harder to grow to malt. But I guess there are some people doing it. We do a fair number of very traditional fruit beers, and we're buying a lot of fruits locally for those fruit beers, a lot of organic cherries, strawberries, I guess even cranberries that we've sourced from local producers.
1-800-399-3566 to Portland and Rita. Hi, Rita.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I'm delighted to see and drink all of these wonderful beers that are out there, but I have a gluten problem, and there are very few people who are making gluten-free beer. Budweiser makes Red Ridge, which is not especially good, but it's affordable. There are some other beer makers who make a gluten-free beer, but they're very expensive. So I'm just curious about some thoughts on that.
Okay. Anyone want to tackle that?
I would love to make a delicious gluten-free beer. There are several people in my life and in the Oxbow family who are also gluten intolerant, and you know, we've been scheming. Haven't gotten around to making any test batches yet, but we've been thinking about ways to do it, and at some point I think it'd be a really fun project to try to make a truly delicious and unique gluten-free beer. And you know, I have some ideas about that. I think a very hoppy beer could be delicious. Just whatever you do, you can't try to make a malty beer because that's where the gluten comes from. So either a well-hopped beer or what we're thinking for our end, you know, when we get around to it, would be something with really interesting fermentation characteristics, which we enjoy. So it would be wonderful to have them. I had a pretty good one the other day, the St. Peter's. That's a nice hoppy gluten-free beer. But besides that, there's some wonderful ciders in the state that you can try out, and hopefully we'll put one together for you soon someday.
One of our brewers, I'll just quickly add, Matt Edwards, he brewed a phenomenal pilot batch of a gluten-free beer that was a sour beer, a little bit of a different interpretation of it along the traditional Belgian lines, and maybe this call will be our inspiration to try that on a larger scale.
All right, Rita. Well, thanks for being an inspiration. We're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
I'm Scott Simon. There may be gridlock in Washington, but at the local level, people have to solve problems alongside their neighbors.
You know, they like, they ain't getting married in my church.
To me, it just ain't right.
This is my relative. We're still speaking to each other.
Listen for a special program, Groundwork, Democracy Close to Home.
And tune in for this special program immediately following Maine Calling at 1 o'clock. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Guinness and Porcelli's, serving Italian cuisine and offering more than 200 Italian wines located in downtown Bar Harbor and at GuinnessPorcelli's.com.
In München steht ein Hofbräuhaus.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, The Beers of Maine. With me in the studio, Rob Todd, founder of Allagash Brewing Company, Tim Adams, co-owner and director of brewing operations at Oxbow Brewing Company, and Dave Evans, president and co-owner of The Great Lost Bear. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. Before the break, we were talking about the idea of a gluten-free beer, a difficult but noble goal. I want to ask about the potential for non-alcoholic craft beers. Possible?
I guess it's possible. The technology that's used to make those beers is extremely expensive, and so it's probably cost prohibitive to do on a craft scale.
So you can't get the taste profile without the fermentation process that creates the alcohol. And so what you're doing in those non-alcoholic beers is removing the alcohol? Is that how?
You can do it a couple ways. You can either have an incomplete fermentation where you don't add the alcohol in the first place, or you can actually make a beer and then remove the alcohol from the beer. And that process is very expensive. But you raise a good point. The alcohol is an important flavor component to the beer.
We have a home brewer who has reached us on Twitter about brewing, quote-unquote, the bigger beers at home. And they write, I tried with an extra 1.5 pounds of inverted sugars and molasses, but still got 5% ABV, which I assume is alcohol by volume. Any tips there for achieving a bigger beer?
Well, it's a little tough without having a bit more background information, but the long and the short of it is that if you want more alcohol, you need more ingredients. More malt to begin with. If you're an all-grain brewer, load that mash tun up with more malt. If you're using extract, throw another can in there. If you do want to raise the alcohol in the kettle during your boil, then, yeah, those sugars should absolutely do it. There's many different types of sugars and out there, and they will all help you accomplish that. Sugars in the kettle will dry your beer out a bit, which I love in my beers, and Rob does in some of his. That's traditional Belgian technique. But if you're going for a big, rich beer, more malt.
You started out as a home brewer, was it safe to say?
Yes, absolutely.
Can you achieve the same levels of high-quality production at home that you do now in your professional brewery?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are some incredible home brews out there. In all honesty, it kind of gets easier once you get the bigger equipment. Homebrewing is a blast, but there are a lot of challenges and elements of the process that are more difficult to control on the homebrew level, but that just makes it fun. And our brewery up at Oxbow is, it's a real brewery. We're a 7-barrel system, but it's, compared to some of the bigger breweries out there, it's sort of a glorified homebrew system, and we have a lot of fun with it.
1-800-399-3566. Let's go to Eric in Portland. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
A quick comment and quick question. First, is it Tim from Oxbow?
Yep.
I love your farmhouse. I've been having that down at Flatbread, so good beer.
Thank you.
And then a question for Rob. I was down on the waterfront just the other day, and I tried your Prince Tuesday. And I was told that that was a collaboration between you guys, Main Beer Company, and Rising Tide. I wonder if that's true, if you have any background on that beer and maybe any future collaborations.
Yeah, that is true. That beer was a lot of fun to make. It, you know, one of the great things about being in the beer business is that it is very collaborative. We all get along real well. You know, if a shipyard needs a part for their bottling machine and we've got it, we're more than happy to lend it to them. You know, if we need some special malts or hops that they have that we've run out of, they're more than happy to lend it to us. Same goes with Geary's, Main Beer Company, Oxbow. We all get along great, and it's just a lot of fun to be in an industry that's so collaborative. You know, any brewer anywhere in the country, they can come into our brewery. They can see whatever they want. There aren't a lot of big secrets. So there's a lot of collaboration, and we did that project with Main Beer and Rising Tide. It was a lot of fun. Main Beer and Rising Tide came to Allegash. We brewed the beer together, and we actually raised some money for Portland Trails in the sale of that beer. So it was a great project.
Isn't there some competition, though, between, you know, say, Geary's and Shipyard? Aren't they kind of looking at each other from time to time?
I'm sure there is, especially with those two. But we see all the brewers all the time at the Bear, and they all, as Rob said, everybody gets along very nicely.
You know, and when you think of it, us craft brewers, we're only 5-10% of the market, depending on where you live in the country. So there's plenty of business to go around.
All right, let's go to Rockport and Chris. Hi, Chris. Welcome.
Welcome. I just wanted to identify a new hop farm, a new hop yard in Lincolnville, Maine. Called Duck Trap River Hops, second year of the planting, so it'll be even more prolific, hopefully, next year, but doing well. And wanted to ask if you had, if some of the brewers that you know, both on the call and others you know, what types of hops they're really interested in for some of these new beers, and also some tips for farmers or some pricing strategies. It sounds like you said you could sell all hops. I'm wondering some of those tips for farmers.
Well, there are certainly some strains of hops that grow better in Maine than others, and I would definitely, you know, experiment and find out what grows well for you on your property and go with those more than just what the brewers want. Because really, if you produce it and it's of high quality, we'll use it. We'll find a way to use it and use it well. So yeah, see what grows well and grow that out, and then you know, one thing, if you're producing a relatively small amount of hops. You could potentially think about saving yourself a lot of money on the, you know, pelletizing and processing and sell them fresh. I know, you know, myself and most other brewers, their favorite time of year is in the fall when the hops are ready. And, you know, we'll harvest the hops and throw them into a beer that same day or the next day and do what's called a fresh hop or a wet hop ale. And you really can't beat it. It's so fun and tied to the season. And, you know, depending on your volume, that could be an option. So I would talk to some brewers and find out, you know, what they're looking for, and take it from there.
You know, and on, I'll add that I think those are some great points on pricing. Just let the brewer know what it costs you to grow the hops. We're open to paying a fair price. You know, you guys are growing it on a small scale. It costs you a lot more to grow it. So we're willing to pay a premium to buy local.
On the consumer side, Dave, are consumers willing to pay much higher prices than they do for Budweiser for a good glass beer?
Yes, they are.
what's the most expensive one you have on tap?
Oh, yeah. Boy. I'd guess around $7.50.
For a pint?
Yeah. Or a smaller pour, actually. It's probably one of the Belgian styles, not Tim's or Rob's, but one of Rob's might be up there. But it's like a 13.5-ounce tulip glass we sell the stronger beers in.
Yeah, what adds to that cost? You know, at some point, is it not worth putting a really expensive beer out on the market?
When we started making the Curio about 10 years ago, 12, 13 years ago, I don't remember exactly what it is. You know, it was $12.99 for a wine bottle size bottle, 750 milliliter cork finish bottle. I didn't think it would sell a lot. I didn't think it would really sell at all. And the reason it was so expensive is we buy Jim Beam bourbon barrels for that beer, age the beer for a number of months in the barrels. We only use the barrel one time. Huge amount of labor, huge amount of cost in the barrels, just extremely expensive to make that beer. But we couldn't make enough of it. We still can't make enough of it. And when you think of it, $12.99 for a real unique experience, or even $15 or $30 for a big bottle, it's worth it, especially when you consider for a unique experience with wine or liquor, people are willing to pay, you know, 5, 10, 20 times more. So beer is affordable, even for the most expensive beers.
Dave, do you have
I'd like to add to that. Drink the Maine beer while you're in Maine, because we were looking at some menus in New York City, and Rob's beers are like $35 a bottle in New York City. So for the same one that you can get at the Bear for $12.
All right, let's go to Eric in Gorham, who has a comment about regionality with beers. Hi, Eric.
Hey.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Oh, sure. I just want to first of all give a shout out to Tim. Tim and Jeff know I've been their number one Facebook fan here since day one.
Eric Nielsen, what's up, buddy?
Crushing bows like it's my job. So anyway, yeah, I got a question for you guys about regionality with beer and how it's affected by distribution. And what I mean by that is you guys have a good dichotomy with Tim. You guys are in Maine only right now. Is that right?
We actually have started to sell some beer in Washington, D.C., which is a place where I used to live and have lots of friends and family and has a spectacular beer scene. So we are actually already starting to branch out a little bit outside of Maine.
Oh, excellent. Right on. Okay, so you guys are doing that, and then with Allagash, obviously, there are many places in the country where it can be purchased. And I feel like there's little pockets around the world, or around America especially. Right now, Portland would be one of them. There's upstate Vermont with Hill Farmstead and Lawson's, and all these different small boutique breweries that you really have to travel to the area in order to experience. And I just wanted to get your take on that in terms of how it affects the industry and customer experience and whatnot.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're hitting the nail on the head. There has been a big push of these regional breweries, and people are really responding to it, or the customers are responding. I mean, you know, we're an hour from Portland, but people are driving up to the brewery every Friday for our growler fills from 2 to 6, and I was just over at Sean's brewery, Hills Farmstead, and he was just telling me, you know, people are coming from all over the place to buy his beers, and all around the country there's these little pockets of incredible production, and some of them do get outside of the area, but I feel like they really, you know, enrich the local area. And I know when I travel, the first thing I do is, you know, where's the brew pub? What's the local beer? And, you know, same with food, but on the beer side of things, I think it's all about what beer is brewed in that region. And, you know, some of the styles and flavors might be brewed in that region for, you know, for a reason based on the food or the climate or whatever. So there is a fair amount of, local influence on the beer itself.
And the main brand must work for you, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the reasons we ended up in so many states when I started 17 years ago, we couldn't give the beer away. No one was drinking Belgian-style beers. And just to stay in business, we just had to open up as many markets as we could just to do enough volume basically to survive. And since then, those markets have taken off and we've stayed there. But absolutely, one of our best markets is L.A., and I think people love to see Made in Maine on that label.
All right. Rob, Tim, Dave, thanks so much for being here today.
You.
We're out of time. Rob Todd, founder of Allagash Brewing Company, and Dave Evans, president and co-owner of the Great Lost Bear, a Portland restaurant, and Tim Adams, co-owner, head brewer, and director of brewing operations at Oxbow Brewing Company. Today's program produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Scott McAuliffe answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.